Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Azure Podcast. I'm your host, Evan Basilik, and we are here today on July 1st of 2021, recording episode number 383. And today we're going to talk about the cool stuff we've seen recently in Azure. I've got Cynthia's here as well, and Sajid. Everybody else, I think, might be on vacation, actually. It's that time of year.
I was going to say that, you know, we did unfortunately miss our regular slot last week, too. And this just happens to be the end of the financial year for us, right? Our fiscal year ended yesterday, which was the last day of June. And today, 1st of July, we start a new year. And as is always, as you're getting towards the end of the year, things are crazy. You know, everyone's trying to get stuff done. So, yeah. You know, I guess we just had to skip that week last week.
That might be, you know, I'm trying to remember the last time we missed a week. I just missed it. So we promise our audience we won't make this a regular occurrence. But yeah, you know, like Sajid said, lots of change, you know, new managers, new organizations, new acronyms, floating around, but yeah, so let's get to the news. So we do want to talk about Windows 11, but before we go into that, you know, let's talk about Azure news. So I've got two things. One, the announcement yesterday about AT&T, right? So we're going to acquire their network technology, or we're working on it. Obviously, it's got to go through all the legal stuff, but, you know, this acquire their network technology, and we're going to get into, and this is the term I had not heard before until we had the guy from Azure for Operators on a couple weeks ago, right? The carrier grade stuff, right? And you know, the joke, I was talking to my wife last night and we were joking, like, great, now I'm going to yell that when a call drops as well. It's bad enough when, you know, her computer misbehaves or, you know, some site that she's on doesn't work. Now I'm going to yell that for her phone too. That's some pretty interesting stuff going on there. And then the other piece is, and again, near and dear to my heart, is we've now announced the beta for the Azure Network Engineer Associate certification, right? So this is how to design network, you know, Azure networks and how to configure them. I may have to, I don't normally take beta certifications. I'm not a big certification person. I may have to go take that one just for fun, just to see how it is.
How are they even going to ask questions on that, right? Because those things are so intricate, like, you know, in a computer format, how do they ask questions about that?
It's been a long time since I've taken a certification, but I know we've done a bunch of stuff where there's like, you, these days you're sort of doing things, you're configuring environments, you're running, and it's, I don't know if it's a sandbox environment. I don't know exactly how that works, but I suspect it's something like that again for this stuff. Cause yeah, you gotta, you know, some of it's theoretical, but there's gotta be some real stuff.
So they drop you into like a fictitious environment and you got to figure out what's going on or something like that?
I suspect some of that stuff. Okay. Yeah. I mean, cause I looked at it, some of it was talking about setting up site to site and some point to site connections. You know, again, some of it I'm sure is some architectural stuff as well, but yeah, that's why I'm kind of interested to see what that one looks like. So I'll have to see. I'm keeping my eye on that one. Any other news from you guys?
No,
I had one that I was just looking at that's pretty interesting. It's an ingestion client for Azure Speech. We actually built together a solution that takes in whatever that you put in a blob container, and then it can be automatically transcribed. So the solution already has like the container, the function that would trigger it, and then you can also get analytics from that.
Oh, so you could drop like an MP4 in there.
Yeah, maybe then, we should try it.
Yeah, I was just going to say we should do that for our show stuff.
But yeah, it just came out as like the full solution, not just the services individually, yeah. But it's like an automated flow that you just need to put it in the file and everything else is taken care of.
Now, are these things that you are? So, are you deploying these resources yourself and something in your subscription? Okay, so this is basically sort of like
They give you an ARM template, and then I think a lot of the things are configure ready, and you just need to start using it. It looks like.
Yeah, so sort of you don't want to use the service for some compliance or whatever reason, but you still want the capabilities. Yeah, I saw it's actually I need to go reach out to the SQLMI folks, but like we announced SQLMI. Oh, that was the other one that I meant to put in the notes, but we announced SQLMI with Azure Arc, where you can now run SQLMI in Kubernetes, which means you can run it on premises, you can run it in AWS, you can run it anywhere now.
Wow.
And I'm not really sure, like, this reminds me of the early days when SQL Database released and someone would say, hey, I'm having a problem with SQL Server. Okay, is that SQL Server on premises, SQL Server in Azure? Now it's like, okay, I'm having a problem with Azure SQLMI. Where are you? I'm running in AWS. Wait a minute. What? Are you running AWS's managed SQL? No, I'm running Azure. Yeah, I just see lots of confusion in that. So we'll have to get that team on that. I think that's a pretty cool advancement for that technology as well. So, So that's the big news from an Azure side, and full transparency to our audience. We actually debated this a little bit amongst ourselves as hosts. The other big announcement last week was Windows 11. And yes, we're an Azure podcast, but this is huge. Like, it's been 6 years since we've released a Windows OS. So this is massive. What do you guys think? I mean, I saw some, I'm pretty excited to get on the beta. I tried looking for it today. I'm not quite flighted for it yet, but what do you guys think?
Cynthia, go ahead.
That was the first thing. It's like the look and feel definitely feels very different. And I've seen a lot of people that try to get on Windows 11 through like a VM instead of like doing it on your actual machine. So you get to try that experience.
Oh,
while fulfilling the requirements, I think that was an easier route.
Yep. Have we released the VHDs for that yet, or the VMs for that yet, or that's still coming down the road? Have you seen?
I have no clue.
Okay.
But you know what? If it's all about the UI in this release, I don't know what you're going to experience in a virtual environment, right? It does rely a lot on hardware acceleration. Things like that, and so it's going to look real clunky if you use it in a virtual environment. If you ask me, I haven't tried it. The requirements are, they're pretty strict, right? I mean, they do have some requirements. Like, I have this laptop I'm using right now to talk to you guys. It's a Dell XPS 13, which I use for development and everything, and I got a message saying that I've been taken out of the Windows 11 flight because it's not compatible with.
I think what I've heard a lot is the
4K display and everything. What else does it need?
I was reading some of this because we, this caused a little bit of, press around this, but like digging into some of the technical stuff, my understanding is this is a lot of driven by some of the security and sort of protection stuff that's built into it requires, the TPM chip, which, requires, I can't remember the exact generation of Intel, but like there's some connection in terms of what we're trying to do from a security perspective. It's very different than, and I've been doing this long enough. We won't talk about what version of Windows I first started using. It was the one where you type the letters. This is all about, it used to be about sort of could your hardware do it in terms of speed and performance and RAM. And this, I have not heard anything about that for this. This is all about sort of to achieve the protection and avoid, the built-in Windows capabilities to sort of protect you and your code, right? Is all that's what requires the hardware stuff.
Yeah. It's TPM 2.x or something like that is what you have to have. I'm looking forward to it, definitely. But I think as a developer though, I haven't really understood what's there for me.
I started looking at some of the SDK stuff and I didn't get a chance to go into it real deep. I mean, there's definitely some things coming, but it wasn't clear exactly how they'd show up.
They have the widgets. I guess that's one form of development that might be interesting, where you can I think it's docked on the left, I think, where you could have those little applets. So that might be cool to have.
Yeah. I wonder too, we've historically had like the, with a client OS, you get the server OS to go with it. And we did release server 2019 was the last one that we released. I wonder if when Windows 11 is going to bring with it. So typically it used to be like the kernel would update and it goes with the kernel with the server. I wonder if there's going to, if that's going to show up there as well, or if that's just going to sort of be, you know, server 2022 or something will show up, you know, down the road. So there's usually more sort of bigger, meatier stuff for developers on that side, right? From the server, server side of things. So
exactly.
Okay. Well, cool. Yeah. No, cool stuff. I'm watching my flighting closely. I definitely would like to try it at that point. I'll send you pictures, Siji, just so you see it.
Sure. It'll make me jealous.
So we, you know, we thought about, you know, it's kind of summer. We thought we'd do something fun. You know, and so we thought we'd talk about cool things we've either done recently or seen with Azure. Sajid, when we were talking before the show, you said you've got a couple of things. You know, what's first for you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what I'm going to talk about falls into the realm of just troubleshooting Azure, or, you know, finding things that you didn't expect when you tried to use a service, for example. One of the things that caught me by surprise is, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners use the MSDN subscriptions, right? I mean, you remember with MSDN, you would get that $150 credit. And I think a number of our listeners use that. I know I had a few subscriptions like that that were in my account. And it was last week, one of them just got expired just suddenly, right? And I got an email saying that the subscriptions expired. And now, you know, I had some stuff in there which I was playing around with, which I wanted to get off. And everything's stuck in read only. I can get to the portal, I can see the things, but everything's disabled, right? And I didn't have a credit card that was associated with that subscription either, so there was nothing to back up like financially as well. I tried to copy stuff off it, you know, how you can move resource groups from one subscription to another. But apparently that move entailed writing something to the subscription, and
it isn't
read-only mode. So that's a very awkward situation to be in, you know. I mean, of course, these are supposed to be only for dev tests, so you're not supposed to have anything in there. But I was
Is that where our podcast is?
That's on another one, actually, okay. Which we need to look into. That's why I started getting, let me just see when these things are going to expire. I guess the point here is that these can and will expire at some point, and our listeners should be aware of that. What I recommend is, if you think that you may have some stuff in that you just don't want to lose access to, is to attach a credit card to that subscription. Obviously, it's not going to be charged until this situation is hit, and you get basically you have zero credits suddenly, right? And then you have zero credits, no credit card, and then everything's frozen.
I think if my memory is right, you can actually set a dollar limit on that credit card that you attach for that subscription. So you can say something like, hey, I'm willing to have a little bit of overage if my subscription gets disabled, but I don't want $400 worth of that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure
you could also set a budgeting on your subscription already, right?
So you get notifications.
It will turn off your resources.
Yeah.
And here's the interesting part. If, according to the documentation, if this happens, you can convert that subscription into a pay-as-you-go subscription. That's the recommended approach. And I tried to do that. I said, let me do that. I clicked the button. I put my credit card, but it failed. It just will not convert to a pay-as-you-go subscription. So I don't know what the underlying issues. And let me tell you, you know, for these MSDN subscriptions, Azure support is, I don't know, it doesn't really exist. I tried, you know, opening up a ticket, and it's been 10 days and I haven't heard back from them. So, and I'm not supposed to say that, but, you know, it is what it is. As long as it's a word of caution to our listeners who have these accounts is make sure you got a credit card in there before it's too late.
let's follow up, because we can probably get your subscription squared away, CG, but I think that does drive home one thing that I have seen customers make the mistake, I think sort of the flip of yours, which is, yes, every customer is important. But the reality is, if you've got important stuff in your account and you've got production stuff in your subscription, my recommendation, you shouldn't be running just on your MSDN support. That's different than what you're doing.
I absolutely agree with you.
I've had customers call and say, yeah, I've got MSDN support and I've got this production app and it's down. And you know, and again, it's not a secret anywhere. This is the way business works. But like, you know, if you have a paid support agreement, you do get in the line ahead of the person who doesn't. Right. Yep. Like that is just so. Yeah, I've always, you know, when I've run into customers who have no support for their stuff, I've always sort of been, you know, sort of worried about the expectations they have, because that doesn't match with the way reality works, for better or for worse. Right. So
that was the first thing that I thought I'd discuss. I wanted to give Cynthia a chance to bring up something that's on her mind.
That was definitely very interesting. Something that I've gotten a chance to play around a little bit is bicep, and I got to bicep.
Oh, bicep. Oh, okay. I was stuck on the sub thing. Okay.
And I heard a bit of the backstory about why bicep became the term, I should say, because I was very curious. Like, I asked the question of, is it because arm? And then after that, that was one reason. And then muscle two, and this is like V2. I was like, oh, that's so smart. But it was really interesting to see how the syntax was a lot easier and more intuitive compared to doing arm. And two really cool things that I've found so far is, one, the idea of modules. So you can actually build in like little repeatable components that you can plug into different bicep files. The other is the idea of the script that kind of like ties them all together, which probably is similar to your PowerShell script when you're going to deploy all your different arm templates. But those two have been interesting, and also the syntax itself makes it easier to collaborate when multiple people are working on the same bicep file, or you think about like breaking it down into smaller components person can work on those components.
Yeah. Yeah. My take when I had looked at bicep, I can't remember where I ran across it, but it was sort of the, you know, the recognition that arm, you know, it's really nice to be able to do declarative stuff. And so there's a lot of value in that, but it's sort of bringing it closer to a language, you know, in terms of, you know, better branching and better componentization, and like you were talking about, like all that kind of stuff. So that's sort of the evolution of that.
And it should be just, I think it's supposed to be visually easier to see. You can read it easily. Like arm, if you look at it, you're immediately confused the moment you take a look at it.
It does take some learning to read arm templates. Yes. Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of nice support for the bicep extension on VS Code that does a lot of like IntelliSense. Smart things.
Excellent. Nice one.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, I need to go play with that, because I still do when I do stuff, I still do it the arm way. I need to go play with bicep the next time I have to do that. So for my thing, was doing an engagement recently with a customer, and they were migrating, you know, from one on-premises database platform to Postgres. Azure SQL Server for Postgres. And I'll have to confess, I had no idea Postgres was such a big thing these days, and that Azure has, you know, first class support for it. There's a hyperscale version of it. This is in preview now, but there's what they call their Flex Server, which is sort of the generation two of it. And there's a ton of performance improvements coming, you know, with the Flex Server. But like, I mean, and Postgres has it's got a ton of capabilities, a ton of features, but again, it's point click here. Now I got my server, right? And so, you know, for customers that are really wanting to adopt Postgres, like bringing all this, the benefits to the management and stuff to Azure, I thought that was, being Davis guy originally, I thought that was really cool to see that.
And it's good to see that Microsoft's really putting a lot of effort into getting these other relational databases onto Azure.
Yeah. Absolutely. I heard somewhere, I'd never heard of Postgres, just because I don't play in that space anymore. And like, it's one of the, if not the fastest growing relational database platform in terms of adoption. You know, so yeah, it's definitely something for people to go check out.
What are the decision factors for like when someone chooses to go to Postgres versus like another relational database, or is it mostly on just preference?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that I saw, it's open source first off, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a decision point that a lot of people make. Past that, I'll have to be honest. I actually made a note to myself when I came back from vacation. I need to get one of the PMs from that team to come on and talk to us about Postgres. But like, you know, I couldn't find any feature that, I mean, I'm sure there's some that SQL Server or Oracle supports that Postgres doesn't and vice versa. But like, when I looked at the 90% stuff, which is the stuff that most applications use, Postgres has got it. It, you know, so I think the, you know, my takeaway from it was sort of, it's really the whole open source model. If you're somebody that likes open source, you know, is comfortable with that world, Postgres should definitely be on the list.
And if you, you know, already have it on premises, for example, it's just an easy migration, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of unique things to Postgres from what I know. I'm not an expert myself, but there's a lot of unique things that it does well, you know, certain kind of queries or whatever. And
yes,
I think
keep that when you go. Yeah,
you get to keep that, right? You don't want to lose all of that.
Yeah, no, agreed. Yeah. What was it? I was joking with somebody. You know, I've seen a lot of database migrations, you know, in terms of platform A to platform B over, you know, over my career. And I can't think of a single one that, you know, it never goes with, yeah, I copied over my data and it just ran. Right. Cause, you know, every engine runs the same. T-SQL is a standard, but every engine runs it a little bit different.
Yep.
You know, database migrations are not for the faint of heart. So cool.
I got a couple of quick ones here. One is, you know, the Cosmos DB. We talked about last episode, we talked about all the free, there's a lot of free services or free tiers that Azure services offer. And I was surprised that the free tier of Cosmos DB now is very good. It's 1,000 RUs free.
That's
a lot. Okay. And 25 gigs database space. Now,
and
just to
for
put
our
in
audience, RUs is
request units.
Request units. That's what it is. Yeah.
It's the amount of CPU that's spent to or compute, you know, total CPU network storage, etc., that's spent for executing your query, right? And a typical well-designed query shouldn't be more than 10 RUs. So you're talking, I can do 100 requests per second easy, right, on the free tier, which is a lot, right? I mean, how many even production systems don't reach 100 requests per second? Let me tell you that. so that was a bit of an eye opener for me. So definitely recommend folks. And you're allowed one per subscription. So you know, if you have a subscription, like I created a pay as you go subscription, or even maybe the MSDN subscription as well, you're allowed that one free Cosmos DB. The other thing that I've been playing around with a lot is the Azure Notification Hub. This is the nice, you know, system that we have in Azure to be able to send push notifications to your Android or iOS device. And typically, you'd have to do, you know, you'd have to work with the PNS, the push notification system in Google or Apple individually. Now you just have to work with Azure, and it kind of handles everything on the back end for you. But it's a very, very complicated system, and I can tell you, I've been writing some Xamarin applications recently, and that is the one feature that took the longest to implement was push notifications. It took almost 4 weeks for me to understand it and get it to work. And part of it is just because of, it's how complex it is. I mean, your phone's talking to an API that you created, then you have to talk to the Azure push notification system, the notification hub, and then that will talk to the Google or the Apple system, and then kind of it comes back to your phone, right? So you can imagine the number of hops involved here. And any mistake on anyone is the error message is sometimes just very difficult to track down. One in particular, the most common one is that, you know, you think you've set everything up, you know, you registered for push notifications on your app, and you send, there's a test send button on the notification app. You can send a test message.
Yep.
And you send it and nothing happens, right? You don't get any message on your phone. So you try to track down. There's a little message over there at the bottom that says, you know, like I saw something. It says the message was successfully sent, but there are no matching targets. Well, okay.
What does that mean?
Okay, so track that down. No matching targets means, you know, for the there weren't any devices registered that that were eligible to receive your request, right? Because when you send a message, you're supposed to send a tag. It's supposed to be, you know, you could be only sending it, you know, to people who had subscribed to a specific event, for example. In my case, that was just my app, and it somehow thought there was nobody registered, but I was quite sure I registered. On further review, I realized that the first time I was sending a message, the error message was slightly different. It was saying the push notification system handle for the registration is invalid. Okay, so somehow whatever registration I had created with Azure Notification Hub was not what it was expecting. Okay, and what it doesn't tell you that when it has that situation, it deletes your registration, whatever it has. So now the second time you do it, the error message is different because there's no registration. So it's like, oh, it's sent successfully, but there's no matching targets, you know. So that took a while to figure out why. And because every time I kept doing it, I was getting a different message and it was driving me bonkers. Anyway, so eventually it turned out to be that, you know, on in Android, the way you store your notification token is a little weird. You have to, you know, there's a clear cache option. I don't know if you remember, you guys know Android system. But, you know, in an application, there's a cache and then you have to clear the cache and start all over and then everything worked. But that was just, it just took a long time to figure that out just because the error messages are kind of weird.
That's the part that, you know, when I look at this is sort of maybe a more generalized cloud thing, because this is true for, you know, our competitors as well as for Azure. Azure certainly brings some, or cloud certainly brings like scalability benefits. Hey, I can scale up, scale down. I can, you know, provision faster. But one of the things that you see more and more as we look at more of these services being created, they're sort of higher model or higher concept model services. They're things that abstract, you know, like the push notification, right? Imagine all that you just talked about going through where you had to do it both for Android and for iOS. And you didn't, I mean, even Xamarin allows you to have some commonality across your deployment, but like these services allow you to build, you know, sort of reduce the complexity so you can focus time on building your logic, right? Go back to the Postgres thing before, right? If I'm running Postgres on-prem, I have to, and it's open source, so I have to build it, right? I have to build it, deploy it, you know, configure the machine, all that kind of stuff. If I'm using, you know, Flex Server, you know, I just push a button and now I've got a server, I've got the database. Like, I've set up database servers before. It is easy to go wrong, you know, and just removing all that complexity, now I can spend time writing my app, right? Or building my workload instead of, you know, mucking around with configuring a server.
I love how Evan gets like such an elegant take of this. And mine was like, I have so much appreciation for push notification. I didn't know there was so much behind it. Like for me, it's something I usually disable. And for ones that I care about, I'll see them and I'm like, okay, thank you. But now there's like so much appreciation for how complicated it is behind the scenes.
It is super. When I that whole Windows Phone thing we had, I did do some app development for that, and so have had some experience with push notifications. I feel Sajid's pain. It is a tough spot. Cool. Well, no, this is good. It's kind of neat to just sort of see what catches our attention.
I have one more. Would you have time for another one?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So this one was on Azure Storage accounts, right? Our customers are using Azure Storage, and there's a feature of Azure Storage. One of the settings is the RAGZRS, which is the highest level availability SKU of Azure Storage. Read-only, globally zoned redundant storage. Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's what it stands for, in case you're wondering. I know we like to explain acronyms to our listeners, so there you go. Now, when you have an RAGZRS account set up, you actually have,
fast, by the way, Sajid.
You actually have two accounts set up, one in a primary region and the other one in a secondary region, right? And you're normally talking to the primary region, but in the back end, it's kind of synchronizing to the secondary region. And the secondary region is read-only. That's the RA, right? The secondary region, you can read, you can access it directly, but you can only read, you can't write to it, because synchronization is only one way. They're not getting like SQL Server where they can do it two ways.
Yeah, bidirectional transaction. Yeah.
They have to keep the latency and everything quick. Now, if something were to happen, right, to the primary, it switches over to the secondary. Or you can decide to do it yourself. There's a way in the portal you can go and say, hey, you know, force a failover to the secondary. For whatever reason, you're facing problems, and like, you know, something's wrong with Azure and primary, I'm going to switch over, right? You can do that. Now, when you switch over, what happens is that your DNS record for the secondary endpoint is converted to the primary now. So that becomes the primary. So that when you use the same URL that you were hitting, it will point to the secondary region now, okay? But when that happens, your secondary, your account is now downgraded to a LRS, which is the lowest level.
Oh, because you only have one region at that point.
Only one region. Yeah. Well, and LRS is only one data center too. So it's even less than that. It's not even zone redundant, right?
Yeah.
So now just keep in mind that when that happens, I mean, hopefully that never happens. It's it's some kind of big disaster that happens, but you're now left with a LRS account. Okay. Now you say, okay, you know, they fixed the primary region. Now you want to go back, right? Well, the portal lets you go one way, but there's no button to go back to the way it was, right? You have to open up a support ticket with Azure, right, to say, please make my storage back to the way it was, which is RAGZRS or whatever you had before.
Yeah.
The reason for that is they have to resynchronize everything back, right? Because again, remember, in Azure, the storage is synchronization is one way. So you can't just, you know, they have to do something special to synchronize back. And there's also an egress cost involved with that. Yeah. So if you have a lot of data, they have to charge you for that. So that's why you have to open up a support ticket and, you know, get a call, and then they do it. So it's not an immediate thing. That's something to keep in mind.
I don't know. I don't know if you guys do. So just a little bit of history trivia. The reason that feature exists is because when we had an outage where we lost one of our data centers for a time period, there was a heat event due to a power surge, and it took us, we had this really long tail of storage accounts that it took us we did not lose any data, but we had to, I mean, I was pretty impressed when I heard that some of the folks in the storage team, like they were bit by bit, block by block, recreating this data that were on these drives that were physically damaged. You know, they were like the incredible work to do it, but so there's this really long tail because we came out of that. We did not flip the switch saying take all the storage accounts that were in that data center and flip them to another data center, right? The secondary model you were talking about. And we got a lot of feedback from our customers that said, hey, I don't want you to make that decision for me because it's an all or nothing thing. We do it for an entire region, I think. And customers said, hey, I don't, like, I was okay losing data. I just want to be back up and running. And so we added that feature. So now customers can make that decision on their own. Yeah. So that's one of those features that, like, the outage was super painful. We absolutely not something we're shooting for, but just like any other problem, any other outage, any other crisis, right? We walked out of it learning something, and our customers did too, because we'd never had that problem before. It was always a hypothetical, right? And then when it happened, customers like, hey, I really like that you saved my data, but I didn't need that. I was just writing some, you know, temp file or whatever.
Yeah.
But I needed to get back up and running, and so we added that feature. So yeah, that's a little bit of trivia.
That's very interesting. The other thing that caught my eye is that most of our customers will not use the public endpoint version of storage, right? They'll have it attached to their VNets.
So the storage, private link.
The private endpoint. Right?
Yeah.
So. Now, in that scenario, Microsoft doesn't own the DNS. Like, they often you have their own private DNS entries. So there's an IP address, internal IP address on the primary region and an internal IP address on the secondary region.
Different.
For you. Yeah.
Oh.
So what they do is at the back, so they can't change the DNS entry. So they keep the DNS entry same. It's pointing to the IP address of your primary VNet. And in the back, they reroute that, they kind of, you know, to just have a little route that, like a little router that sends the traffic over to the secondary storage endpoint, right?
So we just logically remap
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So applications are still pointing to that primary VNet, right? Primary IP address, but in the back end, Azure will reroute it back. So I thought that was interesting the way that they, you know, they took care of both these situations with the private VNets and without private, and still achieve that same level of redundancy.
Yeah, no, that is actually really cool. I didn't realize that about the IP address. It's nice to see that the feature we built sort of just handles that. I think that this also gives me the opportunity to sort of reinforce the message I tell a lot of customers. Like this redundancy, these failover things, test them. Just test them. You know, we put a lot of work and effort to make sure this stuff works, but does it work with your app? Like, test it when you don't need it, because when you need it, it may not work.
But the one thing that's very difficult to test, right? We wanted to test this feature is that, okay, we can do the first force failover, but what happens if the VNet in the primary region fails, right? Now you're right, all the attach in the primary region is also failed. And the thing is, there's no way to simulate that in Azure today. I can't go to the VNet and say, oh, you know, pretend you're not working or something like that. I mean, I wish there were. So that's a problem.
I don't want that.
I mean, I think I did mention before that I am experimenting with the Azure Chaos Studio, which we're going to we're going to release soon, and we'll do a show on that when it comes. That allows you to do chaos engineering in Azure. But there's no way to simulate that event, right? So how do we that's a problem. I mean, that might happen, right? At some point, Azure, I mean, hopefully never. I think that's the most rare event I can think of where a VNet goes down. VNets are, you know, fairly resilient. But if a VNet goes down, I have to now switch over manually to say, use the secondary address, the secondary connection string. I can't use the primary connection string anymore. Because that's completely broken.
I would say the way I've seen people test that, Sajid, is you drop in an NSG that blocks all traffic in that range, in the range of that VNet. It would sort of end up functioning the same or close, maybe not exactly the same.
No, the thing is that Azure has to know that it has to switch over, right? Because
you're wanting the failover to actually occur.
The secondary is in read-only. I can't just talk to it. I won't be able to write to it. Somehow Azure has to know, oh, the VNets failed, and therefore I need to
you're combining the two things. You're not talking of just testing. Oh, I got you.
Yeah.
I'll have to think about that. That's an interesting. I wonder how we could do that.
I thought you'd like that one.
Yeah, I do. I have to. That's gonna bother me now. Okay. Well, cool. Well, no, it's always good.
Sorry,
to,
went off long for a long time here.
But these are fun, right? Cynthia, any last thoughts? She's smiling.
I just don't wish everyone a nice long weekend.
If we
sit in time, it'll be a nice weekend ahead of us.
For those of us that are in the U.S., absolutely. You know, we got a long weekend coming up for July 4th. So I'm sorry for all of our listeners who are not based in the U.S. I'm sorry you don't get the day off. You get other days. Okay, cool. Catch everybody later.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.